By Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
And we have a...
I'm going to abstain because I had a meeting.
And we have an abstention by Mr. Millar. That passes 6-0.
Mr. Millar is without...
Was my microphone...
Oh.
It's not a, that's no comment from our board to you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Millar will have a microphone from going forward.
Sign like semaphores. Pinafores. No. Semaphores.
Well, we'll move on. We're going to loan your microphone to the students. And thank you. Thank you all for being here tonight. We have new student representatives tonight. So please, will you introduce yourselves to us? From Morro Bay. Technical difficulties.
Okay. Hi, I'm Sierra Lyman from Morro Bay High School. I'm the ASB president. We've had a lot going on since school started. We just finished homecoming week 2 weeks ago. Our theme was Disney, with our freshmen being Peter Pan, our sophomores being Lion King, and our juniors Moana, and our seniors Up. It was an extremely successful week. We had spirit days every day where people dressed up like they were going to Disneyland and the Disneyland characters and that sort of thing. On Friday, we had our homecoming football game, which we won against McFarland, 28-12. And we had our halftime homecoming show with our homecoming floats, which were the best floats we've ever had, the best turnout at any football game we've ever had, which was really nice. We had our dance fusion team perform at the homecoming football game, and then we closed it up and got ready for our homecoming dance on Saturday, which was the biggest turnout dance we've ever had at Morro Bay High School, with about 320 students, which was amazing for us. We held in the cafeteria, which was new to us, but it was really nice dance. Other things are going on in ASB right now. We're getting ready for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we're going to be telling students to wear pink every Wednesday. And our annual dodgeball tournament is coming on up from the 16th to the 19th, where students get into teams of five, and we have dodgeball games every day at lunch. I don't know what it is with Morro Bay High School, but we're really into dodgeball for some reason. But on October 13th, our next event will be 80s Day in Jazzercise, which I don't know what our deal with Jazzercise is either, but we do it every month. In our classes and club activities, recently we had our biology classes take field trips to the Rock. Ms. Height's biology class partnered up with the Central Coast Aquarium and conducted field experiments on the population of sand dollars in our bay. And they were also able to observe sea otters and take samples of the bay water for clarity and pH level. And then we had, also in biology, a different class take a walk to the Rock to view the sea otters for Sea Otter Awareness Week, which is really cool for them. Last week in Morro Bay FFA, we had our annual opening and closing ceremonies, which had about 300 FFA members, including schools like Paso Robles, Slo High, Templeton, Coast Union, and Atascadero. In choir, we have our first fall performance coming up at St. Timothy's in Morro Bay on October 5th at 7 p.m. And also, our chamber choir will be performing at this Saturday's Harbor Festival in Morro Bay at 1:45. Surf team, our annual fundraiser at Pizza Port is on October 4th this week. We have gotten a lot of donations from professional surfers and surf companies for our surf team to give away as prizes and give to our surf team. I think our first competition will be against Malibu next month. And then last big thing, as you guys most likely know, the Aquatic Center is having a grand opening on Friday. We have our ceremony coming up, and it's the most exciting thing on campus. Everyone's super stoked to finally have a pool. I watch it from my math classroom every day, and we open the windows and stare at it and don't get anything done, but it's amazing. That's what's going on in Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you. We're definitely looking forward to visiting that pool. Mr. Fahey.
My name is Alden Fahey. I am a senior at Pacific Beach High School, and I may be the class of 2018, but I do expect to graduate before the end of the calendar year. some events going on at PB, upcoming events. Back to School Night is October 11th from 5 to 7. Along with a barbecue, there will be a flu vaccine clinic for all any attendees who go to the library. This Sunday is the Fall Harvest Festival from 1 to 5, an event that I will also be going to. Pacific Beach has partnered with the nonprofit Central Coast Grown to offer learning opportunities on the farm that is about a 5-10 minute walk from Pacific Beach, and you can drive past it on your way to Costco or whatever. 15 students are currently enrolled in the farm class. They go to the farm 2 days a week to practice, to learn about growing techniques and even help out on the farm and grow their own food, cook their own food, do a lot of food-related things. The art class led by Ms. Jacobson has partnered with the Prepare program on the property behind Pacific Beach to work with students on art projects that they are doing. And then last but not least, Pacific Beach has had 3 graduates already. Someone graduated within like the first 2 weeks or so, which was surprising. Just go into school and it's like, oh, hey, someone graduated. And there is more to be coming soon, and like I said earlier, including myself.
Thank you very much, and welcome.
Good evening, Mr.
Shinglot.
Hi, everyone. My name is Ritik Shinglot, and if you don't excuse me, I left my notes on my phone today. I'm not being rude. I just didn't have time to handwrite them. Sorry. It's homecoming week at Slo High, which means it's everyone's busy. Our theme this year is Hollywood. We have spirit days every day throughout this week. Yesterday was old Hollywood, so it was 20s, 30s, and 40s. And today was dynamic duos and terrific teams. Tomorrow will be black and gold. Thursday will be a night at the Oscars, so everyone will be wearing their prom dresses, tuxes. And on Friday is our class themes, so freshmen will be musicals. Sophomores will be the Western genre, I guess. Juniors will be fantasy, and the seniors will be sci-fi. It was awesome being out in the quad today at break because we had spirit competitions for the best dressed. Myself and 3 other seniors were wearing Power Ranger jumpsuits, excuse me. So I was running around in a little jumpsuit, in a pink jumpsuit, dressed as a pink Power Ranger. On Friday after school, after our homecoming rally, we will have our homecoming parade through downtown. I'm sure some of you have seen that our students have been designing the floats and decorating the floats starting yesterday in the parking lot. We thank you for letting us use the parking lot, because as the construction continues, it seems that there's less and less real estate to do that stuff on our campus. That's where I'll be after this meeting. So come by and say hi all throughout this week because we'll be there every single day. Humans of Slo High. So we have an Instagram account that Lindsay McLeod is running, our ASB secretary, called Humans of SLOHS. It's taken after another Instagram account called Humans of New York, which basically showcases different kinds of people around New York. Lindsay took it upon herself to showcase different students on the campus. And I don't have any I meant to print out pictures, but I got rear-ended. My car was rear-ended, so I got caught up in that today. But I can show you pictures on my phone, but it is basically an account where students from all different aspects of our student body are showcased. A couple days ago, Ben Martin, who is part of the Engineering Club and Robotics Club, talked about his experience with Dungeons & Dragons and how he loves that magical game. And something that we've seen in interviewing these students is that no matter how normal someone may seem, they always have an interesting aspect of their life, and it's always really cool to learn what new, aspect that'll bring. This weekend, we had a 24-hour musical. It was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Basically, a 24-hour musical is the cast auditions for a random musical that they are not aware of until 24 hours before the showtime. On Friday night, the cast showed up at 4 p.m., and learned that the musical was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and at 7 p.m. on Saturday, we performed it. I was Mr. Salt, who is the girl, the nut girl.
Veruca Salt's father.
Yeah, Veruca Salt's father. She's the squirrel girl, I guess. And I was her father. I had a snooty British accent, and we were both wearing these massive leopard print scarves. It was free admission, and our turnout was amazing. Our drama department's really fun, so if you ever get a chance to go out to a musical or any of the drama performances, definitely take that chance. Mental Health Awareness Week is in 2 weeks. The ASB has another, emphasis that ASB has decided to put on this year is mental health awareness. And in 2 weeks, we'll be holding our Mental Health Awareness Week, where we'll have organizations on campus in the quad, and we'll be having guest speakers throughout the week, where we try and get rid of that stigma that surrounds mental health. It's definitely, Mr. Johnson, our ASB director, said it's a snowballing effect, where a couple years ago, Bella Senval, she started the whole push for mental health awareness, and it's just been getting better from there. So the ASB continues to improve on addressing that issue, and we'll try to build upon what Carol did last year and improve upon that. On October the 14th, we have a suicide prevention walk downtown, and SLO High has a team. So we encourage all graduates of SLO High, all SLO High students, to sign up for our team, because the team that raises the most money will get to lead the walk and hold the banner. So we'll start publicizing that. We're starting to publicize that this week, so we can get as many students and alumni as possible on our team raising money for suicide prevention. And then lastly, tomorrow is Walk to School Day, where we'll be giving donuts to students who walk to school. We were given a $600... You're really counterintuitive. We were given a $600 grant for a safe ride, which includes bike riding and walking to school and basically finding safe ways to get to school. And we've decided to spend some of that $600 on donuts, encouraging students to walk to school tomorrow. That concludes my report. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Mrs. Roger, if I have a question.
Thank you. Well, I don't have a question. I have a comment. And my comment is that we as a group, I think, really appreciate the student reports, board reports from the high schools. And a particular interest to me is a comment that I heard last year. I see that we have Chris Dower in the audience, who is the principal of Pacific Beach High School. Comment that was made to me last year that PB didn't always send a representative because it isn't a comprehensive high school and they don't have all the things going on all the time that Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High School have in terms of athletics and dances and the things that we hear reports about. So I just wanted to tell you, Alden, and you, Mr. Dowler, that the PB reports are really important to me, and I would be interested in hearing not necessarily those kinds of things that we hear from the comprehensive high schools, but, you know, what's happening with students getting jobs through, you know, with outside internships. Exactly. Thank you, Mrs. Sheffer. Or, you know, do students at PB have concerns that are expressed to their board rep that could be shared with us here? Or coming up with any kinds of alternatives from Pacific Beach that allows Pacific Beach to feel like they are on equal footing with SLO High and Morro Bay and have just as much interest in anything they have to share with us as we do with the comprehensive high schools.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. Well said. And I'm sure that Alden will report that back and maybe ask for more input from your students. Loved what you had to say. Love to know that you're getting flu shots. And thank you, all of you, for participating tonight. You're always welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, but we know that you're very busy, so if you'd like to check out now, that's fine, too. So thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
But that's someone in your staff.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So moving on to 7.01, which is correspondence. We had no official correspondence this week, unless board members would like to report any individual correspondence they might have had? Seeing no one, we'll move on to public comment. This is an opportunity for anyone who is here tonight to speak to the board either regarding one of the items on the agenda or an item that's not on the agenda. There are forms in the back for you to complete if you are interested in speaking to us. And seeing no takers on that, we'll move to the business and budget update with Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so Dr. Prater and myself had the opportunity to go to the Schools for Sound Finance Conference in Santa Barbara today. Actually, we drove down this morning, attended that. And so it was a good kind of conference. Again, this is where community-funded districts all kind of get together and talk about community-funded issues and things that are happening. And so they're kind of they work on legislative issues for us, kind of watching what's happening and keeping us informed at all times. So, and it's also nice just to kind of connect with other community-funded districts to see what they're going through and what issues they're having. And so it was interesting just to talk to them about the STIRS and PERS issue and enrollment issues. And what they're finding a lot throughout the state of California is LCFF has increased, the state funding has increased, districts falling out of basic aid status. So there's a lot of schools that are in districts that are right in that kind of area. So Santa Barbara being one of them currently, that's right on the cusp of basic aid, not basic aid. So it was a good meeting. Again, it was only 3-4 hours just to kind of connect. And then we drove back, of course, because we had the meeting. So that was a good thing today. The Blue Ribbon Committee, which Dr. Prater put together to kind of look at budget concerns, is I think they're about ready to kind of finish up their project. Anthony Plaza has been the district rep, so Dr. Prater, myself, Kim, none of us have been part of the conversations. And so I think they're going to meet one last time here pretty soon. I believe they'll be bringing the board kind of their final summary and report here in the next month. So it's good to know. And then lastly, in speaking about PEB and concerns, Dr. Prater had his first Student Senate meeting recently. And so, very important for us to kind of listen to kids and tie in. So that was a really good meeting. And he walked away with a list of items that that the PEB students had concerns with. And some of those were things that we could potentially jump on right away. So I actually walked the site with Mr. Dowler and Anthony Palazzo last week, and so there's just some general landscaping things, some air conditioning trees, some shade types of things. So we're going to try to get jump on those here really quickly in the next month or so, and hopefully Dr. Prater will be able to kind of share some quick positive response to some of their concerns and what's happening there. So it was a good thing.
Excellent, thank you. And we're moving on to educational services update.
Boy, I get to have a mic. This is good. Usually Kim McGrath hands this. For the Ed Services report, what I'd like to share out is online with the Student Senate meeting. We held our first Student Senate meeting. And we had over 55 students from both middle schools and three high schools. And the essence of that is I've asked each principal to identify up to 10, or in St. Louis's case, 24 apparently, students that represent the fabric of their school. And it was an amazing day, as it always is. And we uncovered some things, but the purpose of this first meeting was to get to know each other, set direction. And we introduced the director of Youth Truth, which is a nonprofit group stationed out of San Francisco. And they're funded by the Gates Foundation, and they specialize in designing student surveys specifically for the purpose of identifying what's going on. What is actually happening through the lens of students in our district. And so this will help influence the LCAP. This will help inform us, I believe, in a way that's far deeper than what we've been able to do before. And so the window to provide this survey will be the last 2 weeks of October for our middle and high school students. And it's a web-based survey, and they will analyze the data in San Francisco. They'll put it together in a report. They'll come back out at our second Student Senate meeting in November and share out the individual school site reports with each individual team. I will invite the administrative team on that day as well. And then we will do an aggregate analysis of our district trends across middle and high school. And this will effectively look at student experiences and perspectives by way of safety, tolerance, engagement between adults and students in the classroom. They'll look at drug use and things that we know we're concerned with, which have to do with issues of equity. And so I look forward to seeing that information and giving you guys an update. Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to interject that Mr. Buckman and I also were there for a portion of Student Senate, and it was wonderful. I was impressed by the fact that Los Osos Middle School sent several of their sixth graders, which speaks to the inclusive environment at Loams, that the sixth graders are a part of that campus, and that they were acknowledged as such by being sent to Student Senate. I thought it was awesome. I just wanted to give a shout out to Mr. Illig about that.
Mr. Buck.
Thanks. I have a little more I'll add about the Student Senate back later, but it dawned on me that I didn't ask this the other day at the Student Senate, but can you or do you know there's some strict guidelines on whether students can take surveys, and I don't know if we've asked this or not, so under the FERB Act. So if we can find out whether students are going to need parent permission to opt into this.
Yeah, I believe it's going to be part of the process over the next week or two before we do it. But they have all that documentation within the folding out process. All of our secondary administrators are going through a video of the things they must do prior to giving those surveys.
Great. Okay. And you'll just let me know or put it in front of me.
I will.
Thanks.
So then I just want to let you know that we've been working with the CEO of the YMCA here in San Luis Obispo, Monica Grant, and Amy Shields and I met with their team last week, and we're putting together a concept, a pilot summer program that, you know, we run really good summer programs, but they're typically half day and 4 days out of the week. What we're trying to design is a integrated program partnership that blends the academic savvy of our district with the field trip and experience of expertise of the Y, and integrate that into a full day 8-to-5 program for kids, especially our targeted group of kids, and they would have a summer experience that includes field trips, that includes going to museums and seeing the ocean and being a part of the fun of summer while not having that summer slide academically. And so we're working on that program together, and we're looking at piloting it on the coast for year one, with year two pilot, if it is successful, in the city. And we're looking at, and we're excited about that potential and looking at how we can raise funds for that as well. That will be part of our targeted goal for within our LCAP, I assume. And you know, and I can't leave tonight without acknowledging the horrific tragedy in Las Vegas. And I think it impacts all of us, knowing that it's all over the news. It's impacting our psyches, you know, more than we probably realize, especially our students. And so I just want to acknowledge that we're aware of that, and we'll consciously be sensitive to those evolving situations. But I just want to acknowledge that.
Yes, thank you for doing so. And we're moving on then to the Measure D update with Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, we have a big shindig set up for Friday at 3:30 at Morro Bay High. There's going to be a pool opening that day, grand opening. So the pool is... It's getting cleared, it's getting cleaned, it's getting chlorinated, it's ready to go. It's warm, 81 degrees, Dr. Pruitt told me today, so it'll be nice from that standpoint. Now, it's again, this is a grand opening. It's going to be a quick event. They're actually going to have the U.S. National Women's Water Polo Team is going to be there. And so it's very exciting. So it's actually an interesting time in the district in that I have people from San Luis High complaining to me now at the district that Morro Bay, the coast, is getting more than the city. So very different conversation than what I've listened to over the past 6 years that I've been in the district. So, and it's not on purpose. And we're not, you know, trying to do things fair and go through that. But it's just an interesting dynamic, right? And so, again, the history of it, Morro Bay didn't have a pool. The kids didn't have a pool. They were, you know, all over the place, different times, craziness. So the reason why we focused on that project at Morro Bay High was because of that. So San Luis High, they do, fortunately for us, have the Sunshine Pool to use. And our goal is to build a beautiful pool right down the hill for them as well. And that will happen. So that's very exciting on Friday. We had a little bit of an issue with our annex GMP. So we were supposed to have the annex price here today. So that's the new classroom building at San Luis Obispo High School. And so there was a couple of bids in that. And the reason why I'm talking about it now is it's not on the agenda, so I wanted to bring it up. But there were a couple of bids that were high on that project. And so it was coming in $8.4 million instead of the 7.6 estimate. So we sat down at the table with Mr. Holcomb, with our staff, with ACME, trying to see if there was ways that we can kind of bring that back into line. So I shared at the last budget Measure D budget session, we have this overall budget. Of course, the two budgets at both high schools have escalated, as we know, and we're prepared for that. Our focus is to get all the projects done, but it's really critical that, you know, for 2 weeks, if we can bring that price down several hundred thousand dollars over a two-week period of time, it's worth us doing that. So that's why that's not on tonight. It will be on the next board agenda. So we will be bringing that GMP to you at that time. So I just wanted to make sure. I let Leslie, the principal, know, and kind of, you know, letting people know. So after that, a couple big projects. So the student support buildings. Morro Bay High School, as well as the student support building and performing space at San Luis Obispo High School, are going to be right around the corner in terms of getting those started. Again, because of the phasing aspect, doing those first allows us to then free up other buildings on the campus so that we can proceed with other construction. So it's all about to hit, ramp up. I see Mr. Toma here in the audience who's been helping with a lot of the design work at both schools. So it's very exciting, but it's still... it's a process to get to that point. So that'll be coming next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. And moving on to item number 9.01, this is the determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
I'm going to look a lot like Kim McGrath tonight. So three board items I'm going to go ahead and take from Mrs. McGrath tonight, if it's okay with the board. So the first one is determination of sufficient textbook and instructional materials. Each year, we basically have to... the board has to pass have a public hearing in regards to whether or not we have sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Throughout the beginning of the year, we talk to sites, we find out. If there are any issues, we, of course, alleviate those right away with Amy Shields' instructional department to make sure that students have what they need in our classrooms. So based on those, you know, talking to sites, going through that, we do have sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. And so this is just a public hearing for the board to hold tonight, which will basically kind of share that with everyone.
So this is, we are opening the public hearing. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there anyone on the board that would like to comment on this matter? Then, therefore, we close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Shields, for coming up. This is 10.01, and now we're going to be discussing the results. our student results. Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
At the last board meeting, Mrs. McGrath and I presented results from the spring 2017 Smarter Balanced Assessment in English Language Arts and Mathematics for our students in grades 3 through 8 and 11. And as you remember, we shared our district results as well as the three-year growth trends for each of our LCAP student groups. Now that the data has become public, I would like to share comparative data for our district, county, and state. There's a lot to celebrate tonight, as well as consider as we're planning for our next steps. And let's begin with English Language Arts. I'm on. Thank you. It's really good news.
Keeping us in suspense.
This is a little get you ready for it.
Building the tension.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, so this first slide, thank you so much, shows SBAC results for California, our county, San Luis Coastal, and other similar slow county districts. The number on the bar represents the percentage of students who met or exceeded standards on the assessment. The number below each bar is the number of students who actually took that assessment. Overall, as you can see, San Luis Coastal students perform higher in English Language Arts than any other district in our county and significantly above the county and state average. So let's take a little deeper look into our comparative scores for our various student groups. Again, like I shared with you last time, on the left side, you can see our non-socioeconomically disadvantaged student results. On the right side is our socioeconomically disadvantaged results. San Luis Coastal's non-SCD students outperformed all other districts in our county with an 11 percentage points above the county average. San Luis Coastal's socioeconomically disadvantaged students also performed all other similar districts in our county with 6 percentage points above the county average and 8 percentage points above the state average. This next chart on the left side shows you results for our English learners. On the right side shows you results for our redesignated fluent English proficient students. Our English learners in San Luis Coastal results were, again, highest in the county for similar-sized districts, 6 percentage points above the county average, and interestingly, the same percentage as the state. 65% of our reclassified fluent English proficient students met or exceeded standards. Again, our results are significantly above the county, 11 percentage points, and the state average of 7 percentage points. And then if we finish off English Language Arts by looking at our students with disabilities group, we again outperformed all other county schools, districts with significant numbers of students with IEPs, 6 percentage points above the county and 8 percentage points above the state. Overall, the district ELA performance for each of our students' groups is strong in comparison to other local districts, county, and state. Let's take a look at mathematics. San Luis Coastal's overall achievement in mathematics is impressive. With 62% of our students meeting or exceeding standards, we are outperforming the county average by 19 percentage points and the state average by 24 percentage points. If we look at our non-SCD and SCD student groups, it's equally impressive. We have a 74% at or above standards, which is 18 percentage points above the county and 17 percentage points above that state average. Our socioeconomically disadvantaged students outperform the rest of the county in mathematics by 13 percentage points and 15 percentage points above the state average. For English learners in RFEP, you can see 22% of our students met or exceeded standards, which is 12 percentage points higher than the county and 10 percentage points above the state average. Our reclassified students were even more impressive. With 53% at or above standards, they outperformed the county by 19 percentage points and the state by 12 percentage points. And finally, our students with disabilities student group performed 5 percentage points higher than the county average and 6 percentage points above the state average. There is a lot to celebrate here. I feel pretty proud of the work that our teachers, our principals, our board have done in raising these achievement scores. We are currently now the highest overall ELA math achievement in the county. Our non-SCD and socioeconomically disadvantaged students have the highest English language arts and math achievement in the county. Our English learners have the highest English language arts and math achievement of similar sized districts in the county. Our reclassified students have the highest math achievement in the county. Our students with disability have the highest English language arts and math performance compared to similar sized districts in our county. These positive outcomes reflect your commitment over the past 7 years to support equity and success for all students. You've invested in ongoing professional development and support for our instructional model, demonstrating courage to adopting non-traditional, rigorous curriculum. In fact, we've got a couple teachers here tonight that could vouch for that very rigorous curriculum. The time and effort that our teachers and principals have spent transitioning to our new standards, making massive shifts in how we teach, and learning new rigorous curriculum with common assessments is paying off with positive results. With that said, we clearly understand that there is still a significant achievement gap among our student groups. It's not enough to be highest in the county. The LCAP goals and the single plans for student achievements have been developed with the target of narrowing the achievement gap by accelerating student performance of our underperforming student groups. We are putting in laser-light focus on this task down to the classroom floor and each of our individual students. I look forward to sharing with you in a couple weeks our individual site plans for narrowing the achievement gap, and at our future meetings, sharing with you our district progress towards closing that gap. And I would be happy to take your questions.
Mr. Unger.
So a couple things, Amy. First of all, I want to thank you for putting the end down the number of students that took the test. And I think it's important for anybody watching and who may see those figures to understand that not every student in our district takes the test. And so that's why the figures of test takers are lower than the total actual population right. of our district. And kind of along that line, I'm assuming that we have a 95% participation rate in the testing. Again, for those who may not understand, that's a key number that the federal government expects participation. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And then the last thing, for people that might not understand, could you explain the difference between our RFEP and our EL students and why we might see such a divergence in those test scores?
I'd be happy to. Our EL group represents our English learners. This means students who are currently learning English as their second language. In our district, these students are also learning the various curriculums of their grade level while they're learning that second language of English. We would expect their scores to be lower than a fully English-speaking student. Our RFEP, or Reclassified Fluent English Proficient scores, represents students who have learned English and who have now been reclassified because they're ready to be successful in all curricular areas in English only. I think it represents the fact that we're redesignating the right kids when they're ready and geared for success. And I feel pretty strongly about that. We're not holding on to them too long, and we're not sending them off too early. I feel really good about that. With that said, when you think about our English learners, the kinds of supports that we're putting in place at the classroom level, first are about the classroom teacher, that best first instruction with support from their classroom teacher. We are very fortunate in this district through the LCAP that we place a number of supports, for example, EL aides, EL instructional specialists, additional materials, resources, online programs like Rosetta Stone to accelerate that learning as best and as fast as we can. Did I mention summer school? Lots of programs in place to accelerate kids learning English so that when they do redesignate, they can soar. And we see pretty good scores. The other thing, I'm not sure you asked me this, but I'm going to go ahead and tell you anyways. I'm pretty pleased with our EL math scores, because these are kids learning English at the same time they're doing this very difficult, rigorous math curriculum that is loaded with academic language and problem solving that's all about reading and writing. It certainly is not what we would want it to be, but I'm happy to see that it says to me our kids are learning math while they're learning English.
Right. I would agree with that. I think that's one of the challenges of the math, and that's one of the things that I think is so wonderful about the scores that we're seeing, is that the math curriculum, as we've been teaching it now, has become a very language-based curriculum. And so any student with any kind of language difficulty may have a hard time with that. No, what I was actually hoping you'd touch on is why, what happens when a student, we have this pot of English language learners, and so we kind of expect them not to do as well, and then the second they're redesignated, they fall out of that other pot. Could you explain that a little bit more?
You just did a lovely job doing that. That when a child is redesignated, we actually do follow them for the next 3 years to make sure that we've done that correctly and that they really are ready to fly. But in that redesignated group, we do expect them to be performing as any other student at their grade level, and that would be to be performing well. I think when you see our percentage at 53, if my memory serves me right, it's within just a couple points of our all-student group. So they're right up there with the group.
May I just add to that?
Please.
So are you saying that we're putting them in a situation where there are higher expectations for them, and that's actually causing them to reach higher?
Well, I think in the kind of curriculum and instruction that we're putting forth in our classrooms, that high expectation is there for all kids. And I think the difference for our English learners is old model, go out and learn English, a lot of time spent out of the classroom. That's not the way we're doing it anymore. We're asking a lot of our English learners. We've really got them on a double track of you're learning English, but you're also learning this very difficult, rigorous curriculum, and we're here to provide the supports for you so that when you do redesignate and you become a fluent English speaker, you're flying. You're ready to go.
Wow. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Mr. Unger took one of my questions without asking me.
Sorry.
That's okay. And that had to do with the RFEP students and how well they're doing. And you talked about some of the ways that our English language learners are being supported under the LCAP. But I wonder if you might also discuss a little bit how under our LCAP we're supporting our children in poverty.
I'd be happy to. When I think of our five focus areas of our LCAP, focus one is all about best instruction for all students. Focus two is all about what we do to service our students in our student-specific groups, in particular our SED group, our students living in poverty. I can point to a long list of things that are included in that, things like summer school, where we reach out and target to find our families with kids living in poverty and get them in our summer school programs. Our four Success for All preschool programs, that is exactly what they do. Our AVID programs at all four of our secondary schools reach out and support students whose parents haven't had the opportunity to go to college, first-time college potential students. We have additional sections at each of our secondary schools put in place specifically to provide interventions for students needing them, many of whom are students living in poverty. Our Bridges Intervention Program that we've put in place in our elementary to support students who need that additional. Online interventions that are available at our school sites. Our ST Math, our Wowzers, these are things available to school, to all students, in particular to our students when they're at school. leveled literacy intervention. This is our early reading intervention for kindergarten through second grade that's available for students needing it at all schools. Read 180. I mentioned the EL specialists in particular as an additional support for our English learners. Pacheco program. I would be remiss if I didn't mention a program that supports 242 of our English learners in what research tells us is the very best way to learn a second language. Raising a Reader, a program that I know Jim is in favor of and has some good things to say about. That's about providing books to take home and go home with our children, our preschoolers, and some of our TK classes on a weekly basis. It includes an embedded professional development, parent engagement piece to it as well. And then I would be remiss if I didn't at least mention all of Focus Area 3, which is our culture of care. And very specific in Focus 3 are the things that we do, our counseling support and our MFT and MFTI programs, the ways we reach out to our families in need and provide the help that they can get, because you can't achieve academically if you're not socially, emotionally ready to go. And so we have many, many programs in place. Did I mention after-school transportation and breakfast program? And I mean, it goes on and on.
You are so good at what you do. It's almost as if you were prepared for my question.
It's something I have a heart for, Mrs. Roger.
Let's see. The LCAP, the RFAP. Those were my questions. Thank you very much.
And Ms. Drunker.
So just one more thing that I think we should acknowledge. I think possibly one of the reasons that we've been doing so well is that we really started this trip about 5 or 6 years ago when we established the focus areas. Somehow somebody pulled out a crystal ball and said, gosh, this is important for our children to start learning in different ways, having different kinds of interventions, getting the Bridges program, getting the Danielson program, the level literacy program, all the things that we started doing probably 5 or 6 years ago before the Common Core was institutionalized and before the SBAC scores. So I think just kudos to the district and the people that have made this happen and have given us the head start. And I would expect and I would hope that our other school districts in the county will follow our trajectory.
Oh, Mrs. Sheffers has a question.
And the comments I'm making are not to rain on anybody's parade in any manner, but I just want, and I know that as a board, but I want to make sure that we all are so aware of the work that needs to be done.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the success rate, we are growing incrementally, and that's really important to keep in mind. But when we do look at these scores and we do realize that we have groups of students who are more successful than others, often through, it doesn't mean that they're any smarter or any better. It just means that they have supports in place that are more readily available to many of them, and that we are doing our very best to keep adding more, as Mrs. Shields so thoroughly pointed out, and bringing more to the table, as Dr. Prater mentioned, with additional resources for summer. But it is a very serious goal of ours to bring all students along. And I am not patting myself on the back too much yet, but do acknowledge the incremental growth while realizing how far we still have to go. But thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Sheffer. And Mr. Quisenberry.
This is in the way of a comment. I think oftentimes the approach to education has been in the past 15 years sometimes is the rising tide lifts all boats thing. And I think what we have realized and acknowledged is that if your boat has a hole in it or if it's stuck in the mire, that you have to do something. And I think that's what we've committed to doing, was to patch the boats, get them out of the muck, and move them along. And I think the professional development programs have been a major repair job. We're putting in really good pedagogy, and I think that's the thing that's really important. And it's been a Herculean task I think, for our elementary teachers and soon to be our secondary teachers. So I just wanted to compliment them, too.
Yes, of course. Then thank you, Mrs. Shields. We are moving on now to item number 10.02, proposed revisions to board policy 0410, which is being presented by Mr. Pinkerton.
Well, fortunately, I have a couple of board members who are on our subcommittee that can help with this. basically, you know, Kim, can you go drop down a little bit for me just for the title aspect of it? So, no, up, excuse me, all the way up, sorry. So, the focus, I think, on the board policy group thus far, the board subcommittee, has really been on these legal things that we need to legally update to kind of bring us along and get us to where we need to go. So this first one is non-discrimination for district programs and activities. You'll see a couple of additions in terms of the kind of the list of different groups that are protected classes. That's the first part. So the next is kind of an addition that's come recently, and that has to do, you know, specifically with the use of any racially derogatory discrimination in terms of athletic team names, mascot, nicknames. And so that's kind of the core group in terms of what this the main change that I think has come about with, or the addition, I should say, to this non-discrimination policy. And, of course, when there is an issue, the director of personnel, Krista Newland, is the one who, this would be a uniform complaint. So it'd be go through the uniform complaint policies and procedures that would go through our personnel office. And I think that's outlined as well on the bottom of the policy. So if the board has any specific questions, we can have Mr. Buckman, Ms. Sheffer, is there anything you want to add in terms of this particular policy or questions? No? Mr. Millar?
Well, it reads like a mashed up board policy mm-hmm. and administrative regulation. And I'm not sure that that's to the better. Particularly things like a board policy directing that if there's a complaint about access from, you know, the Americans with Disability Act, that the that there will be a, where is it, plan implemented, yada, yada, yada. And that's really not kind of board policy. That's really more administrative decision making. So that's my only comment. I mean, I'm not in favor of discrimination in any form, but I think we should write board policy in a general sense and have the administrative regulations implement.
It's my understanding, and Mr. Buckman can correct me if I'm wrong, that the language in red was suggested by our attorneys, that we didn't, the subcommittee, we don't generally mess with the language in red when we receive it, because that has been inserted at the suggestion of counsel. So I understand what you're saying, but that's where the language in red typically comes from. Do you agree, Mr. Buckman?
Yes, I would agree, and I think the red is also including suggestions that come from Gamut, from
in particular CSBA.
Gamut is a yeah. subpart of California School Boards Association, and they too have attorneys on staff, and are basing a lot of their decisions on what new code is being adopted at the state level. So, it's a fine line, I understand that, Mr. Millar, between the administrative regulations and the board policies, but it appears that this may be coming up more and more for us as we need it.
Mr. Unger?
So I'm just am going to ask, we do then have our attorney or one of our attorneys vet this language, is that correct?
Well, we didn't, this language, the language in red right. didn't even come from us.
Okay.
Now, I think that something that we could take into consideration in response to Mr. Millar's remark is as the subcommittee, and perhaps we should, wouldn't be a bad idea to find out if it was recommended by as a new insertion, where did that come from?
Yeah, that
and
would
that's be, because Gamut right. or CSBA, I have no problem messing with. If it came from
Absolutely.
Our council, then I think we need to look at it a little more, you know, seriously, but or both seriously, but with us, I would be less, I would be more hesitant to make revisions. But if it's Gamut or CSBA, I agree that's not, we don't need to adopt. Just because it's a suggestion they make doesn't mean it's something we need to adopt.
And,
thank you.
And if I can add, I think Ellen and I have been working with Kimberly, who's just been wonderful, and we have been very pretty strict on some of the suggested language, and we've also gone back and looked at language that we had adopted before to make further clarifications. And I would point to the section that starts the superintendent designee shall notify. Students, parents, and guardians, employees, organizations, such a notification shall be included
right
in
there.
Each. You got it up there?
It's right there in purple.
Yeah. Okay, and so the purple. And I think this comes from Ellen and I both having children in the district and knowing that the parent guardian for the parent guardian signature on the annual notification to parent becomes a very valuable tool for the district and ensures that a parent's reviewed it. And so both of us agreed that this was something we should add, and that's actually going back into policy that we already had.
So we, as a process, from my experience, we do not send our board policies to our attorneys. Unless there's a specific, you know, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion. So I don't, did she do this? Did you know, did Kim tell you that she sent this one in particular or no? So I think she would have outlined. I don't think
right.
she did. So the normal process, again, the freedom of speech one that we had recently that the board adopted, you know, that was one definitely went through our attorneys, even our AARs, those types of things. But our normal process is really to Gamut comes up with their new, you know, after laws are passed, new requirements come in, they update the board policies. So everything that you see underlined in red or if you see struck out, those are things that Gamut is recommending to us. So that is the normal. We'll take our board policy. We'll add the additions that Gamut shares with us to, you know, bring them up to kind of their interpretation of what's legally what we have to do. Those are added, and then we strike out the old language. So that's what you have in front of you. So the things that I believe that Mr. Buckman and then Mrs. Sheffer also, so they added, you know, like the in the purple, signed by the parent or guardian from the annual notification. But all the other things that you see underlined in red are all things that came from that Gamut recommended board policy.
And so, sorry, go ahead, Chris.
So basically, I think as we started this, because remember when we did this, I don't know, however, 16 years ago or something like that, I think we actually took Gamut. And so what you're saying, for those who don't understand, you know, Gamut is a policy service of the California School Boards Association. We based our original board policies when we did the major revision on Gamut, so this is kind of building on that. And for my information, so as I read these in the future, the red are the recommendations from Gamut, and the purple are recommendations that the subcommittee has made. Is that correct? Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And if I might ask about that then, so it appears then that you've added the sign by the parent, as Mark pointed out, from the parent annual notifications handbook, and you've also added that it is a board policy as well as an AR. Is that what you intended by this? That now is so. It's in purple. Is the reason I say that because it says BP.
Then it's a part of this policy. We're recommending
that, right? And so I guess going back to Mr. Millar's comment, can you tell us why you feel it's important for it to be both a board policy and an AR?
The what's in purple?
Yes, this particular.
Because it ensures that we have something with a parent signature on it in case of questioning. We're saying that it's sort of stronger than the AR, that we want the board is directing that this absolutely be done because we're not involved in creation of ARs. So if there's something the board feels particularly strongly about, it must be in the board policy.
So really this is all we're looking at in terms of the board.
The purple.
The purple and the and
yes.
adding the board policy to the number of the
But I think that's a good point has been raised that as one member of the subcommittee I was not aware of, so I think that we will need to ask Ms. McGrath in the future to differentiate colors if it's been gamut or from our attorneys. Because I was working under, because the first major revision we did was one that came 90% from our attorneys,
right. yes.
which was the
Very
one we
different.
Did last time. And mm-hmm. so that is an error on my part that I will now, you know, be aware of, that I had made an assumption that anything, because that was what was how it was presented the first time, that if it's in red, it came from our attorneys. So now I think we can have some differentiation, and that will certainly assist me in my charge from the board.
Well, no mea culpa necessary. We are so grateful to both of you for the work that you put into this. This is a ton of reading and sorting through, and we very much appreciate it.
And this is just the first reading tonight, so we can clarify anything the board wants, or if the board so chooses to approve it tonight, it's totally up to you.
I'm sorry, please.
Go ahead. Mr. Buckman, you had a comment?
I'm going to try to hold us to, if I can, and just suggest standard procedure would be to have two readings, and in fairness to the public, to have a chance to review this in, over a longer period of time. On some of these more complicated ones, non-discrimination district programs and activities, I appreciate your mm-hmm. comments, Ryan, but
sure.
I'm going to just, and nobody has said that we wouldn't do that, but I'm just going to suggest that in most cases we look for the second reading.
Are you making a motion then, Mr. Buckman?
No. Just a clarification.
Okay.
I mean, there's discussion. And
basically, is anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Is there a consensus, a thumbs up on the board on that? Okay.
Thank you. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, if I could just comment on procedure a little bit. Our practice, in my experience, has been that we bring the revisions to you for this first reading, and we do not present these to our council unless something comes up in your discussion that for you to direct us to get that. Otherwise, we will have a very complicated process and a very expensive process to handle that. And secondly, you have an existing board bylaw that, as a routine matter, your board policies will have two readings. So unless you take action on a first reading to waive that second reading, if it's a straightforward item, and approve it on your first reading, you need to take no action at all tonight. It automatically will go to the second reading and come back to you in the future based on whatever direction you have for us.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification, Mrs. Holmes.
And just,
Mr. Buckman.
I'm sorry. And just one more. So I know today during our meeting there was a question over, and I can't remember the specific topic, but the question did come up to give us a further and look more deeply into the suggested wording. And my sense was that might take us to the attorney. So I think
that was not my understanding.
So perhaps we'll bring this back for a second reading, and in the interim, you'll have any opportunity to talk.
Not this board policy.
Okay.
This was one coming up, but so
okay.
It's on the radar.
Okay.
Maybe we'll have Mrs. McGrath clarify some of these points in Friday notes mm-hmm. for the board too, kind of the process too.
I think that if the board subcommittee feels that a proposed board policy needs to be directed to our attorneys, then I think that needs yeah. to be authorized, and I don't know in what way that would be, either by the superintendent or by the president and clerk or in a meeting, but we are in danger of incurring quite a lot of cost if we refer every question or even some of our questions unnecessarily to our attorneys.
Okay, point taken. Moving on, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so the next board policy revision is BP 6145, which is extracurricular and co-curricular activities. So, and again, this is, you know, a lot of change in terms of the legal aspect of involving all students, can't charge fees. You can't needlessly not allow students to participate in other extracurricular activities if there's, you know, no reason not to. So that's basically what this policy, kind of the overarching theme of the policy is. So there's some minor changes in terms of the first sentence there, which seems to me a little bit more, you know, on the grammatical side in terms of how it's laid out. But instead of experiences, it's enhancing students' feelings of connectedness with schools. And then it talks about how you can't have prerequisites for student participation that are not essential to the success of the activity. And some changes in terms of, you also cannot prohibit activities based on any of the prohibited categories, which a lot of were outlined in that non-discrimination policy as well. So you can't prohibit certain groups of individuals from those activities. And again, we know at the bottom, like I said, we can't charge students for extracurricular activities as well. So it just kind of cleans it up a little bit, deletes the definition. Other than that, seems pretty basic.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Well, and I'm first of all going to apologize to my fellow board members and to the administrative staff. I should have caught this earlier than today. One of the things that I want to point out about this policy, and if you'll go down to the second page where it says extracurricular, co-curricular activities, eligibility requirements. Mm-hmm. I was in this district when they decided that they would have this no F policy. It is not in the Ed Code. It is not a CIF requirement. It is a decision that was made by this board, and I'm going to say over 25 years ago. So I don't know if we have any board members that have been here for 25 years. But, and I'm going to give you my take on it as a former teacher and a former coach, is that the kids most affected by this, in my opinion, are the socially and economically disadvantaged kids. This no F policy has kept kids from participating, particularly in winter and winter and spring sports. The way it's been run, and I don't know if it's currently run this way, I haven't really investigated, and I apologize for that, was that a kid could apply for probation, mm-hmm. an academic probation, and then he's required to go around. Usually the coach kind of runs this during the fall sports season. And on a weekly or biweekly basis, and now it's done easier now with PowerSchool. The coach can just look it up. But if back in the day, they'd go around and they'd get their various teachers to certify that they were getting at least a C, or if they had a D, that they didn't have an F. And this involved a lot of lobbying. What would happen sometimes, and I'll be honest with you, is that kids would stay eligible for the fall sport, and then the final grade would come out, and now they're ineligible for their winter sport or their spring sport. So there's not, in my opinion, and again, I'm just giving you my view of things, and it's a very limited view, and it's a little old now. I've been away from the classroom for 7 years. In my opinion, this fell heavier at Morro Bay High School than it did at San Luis High, especially with their trimester system. But as the old wrestling coach, I was having kids that would come in, and I'd recruited them, talked to them, and they'd say, well, I got an F. I got an F in my, or I'm about to get an F in my class, and I'll be ineligible after, January, whatever. So I would just like for us to look at this and think about it. It's kind of one of those rules that came in when, there was, what's the policy I'm trying to think of? Zero tolerance kind of policy. And I don't have a solution on, you know, right at hand to tell you what it should read, but I would like us to take another look at this, and I would like, if I could work with an administrator or whatever, to take a look and talk to our athletic directors and maybe some selected coaches and how they feel this. They may not feel the same way about it as I do. So between now and the next board meeting, I like this, you know, for a second reading for sure, and I would like us to perhaps investigate a little bit further.
So, Mrs. Sheffer?
Well, I was just going to suggest, I appreciate your comments, Mr. Quesenberry. My suggestion would be that if you are willing to do that legwork and information gathering, I would be most interested in any additional input is always welcome. That we could actually, if you don't believe you could accomplish that within the next 2 weeks, or it might take longer, that we could actually, you know, table this. There's no urgency to the way the order in which we approve these or listen to them. So we could consider this a first reading here tonight, but we don't have to. Mrs. Holmes, is it required that we have our second reading at our next meeting? So we could actually, you know, give, if you need some additional time, just let us know, and what language might be suggested. You could either attend that subcommittee meeting or get the information to Ms. McGrath, or however it would work.
And it's probably something that Mrs. McGrath could do relatively easily, to be honest with you. I mean, in terms of just talking to the athletic directors at the junior highs and high schools, talking to the principals, and I mean, really, it's just not having an F in any course section.
But
the 2.0, you know, having a grade point average, those are normal types of things. But you could have 5 A's and an F.
Yeah, but if
and not be able to participate under that policy.
If Jim has some specific questions, then, you know, feel free to do whatever you need to do.
No, I appreciate your comments, because I think that it would probably be better to be looked at in November once we get a chance. But if you say that Ms. McGrath can get it done quickly.
Yeah, let me talk to her.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. Buckman, did you?
Yeah, thanks. So, interestingly, I think one of the ones that we're looking at as a committee, subcommittee with Mrs. McGrath in the future, just today, and I'm looking down at the references at the bottom, it's my understanding that CIF does have some regulations on grades, and I'm not sure what they are, and I'm kind of amazed that this doesn't cite CIF anywhere in here. So I agree with you, Jim. We need to look at this and make sure that we are allowed as a district to be more stringent than the Ed Code or...
I believe this is more stringent.
And this may be more stringent. So anyway, but I'd like to also see the CIF. I'd like to see the CIF references in here for sure. And that's why I think it won't be too difficult.
Yeah, so Kim could bring that back at the second reading for the board and make maybe bring it back to the subcommittee at those points as well and... Share with the second reading. Share the information she finds in Friday notes as well.
Mr. Hunger,
I would agree with the second reading of this. I would ask that it be no later than November, though, because I think a very important piece of this is the fees and the non-char and the
Absolutely.
And the free, essentially the free public education that kids are entitled to. That's in here.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Okay, seeing no one. Thank you. We will move on to item number 10.05. I'm sorry, 10.04,
yes.
Which is to approve a board member pay for permissible absence.
Yes, I'm asking for the board's consideration on behalf of Mrs. Roger. She had a family emergency, really, to tend to a family member who passed. And so she was unable to be here at the September 5th board meeting, and I'm requesting that the board honor that that excused absence.
Mrs. Sheffer, I would just make a motion that we accept the excused absence.
And Mr. Quisenberry will second. It's a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes.
I have to abstain.
And with Mrs. Roger abstaining.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we're moving on to 10.05. Mr. Pinkerton.
So yeah, we discussed this a little bit at our Measure D meeting in terms of the selection of an architect for Baywood Elementary School. So we do have some modernization money available. Baywood and Loams are really the two schools where we have a significant amount of modernization. So we'd like to kind of jump into that process of beginning to work and get some design together so that we can apply for those funds at Baywood Elementary. So in particular, the focus at Baywood is painting, roofing, HVAC, air ventilation, because we'd like to close up some walls. Within that, it's kind of the old style. I don't know if it was 50s or 60s when they kind of put it in, but it's the open classroom. And in talking with staff now, there's definitely a desire to kind of close it and make it more kind of normal classroom space. So this was basically a project that we put out to three different architects, and RRM was the lowest. This is a fixed fee price, so if it ends up being $3 million or $3.5 million, they still get paid the same amount of funds. So it's the fixed fee is $223,980 for this estimated $2.6 million worth of work at Baywood Elementary School. So I'm asking the board tonight to approve that contract.
I'd be happy to move to approve the contract for Baywood modernization.
Take a motion,
I was wondering about that.
Yes,
go ahead.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Okay, seeing no one, Mrs. Roger, do you?
Thank you. I would be happy to second that, but I just want to be sure that it's got painting included.
It does.
It does.
Yes.
Okay, then I'll second Mr. Buckman's motion. Was it Mr. Buckman's motion?
Yes, Mr.
Please.
Buckman. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Except we have a Mr. Millar who's not voting, so it's a 6-0. Is that right? Oh, yeah, it was an aye. Oh, sorry, I thought you were fixed. No, it's actually 7-0. No conflict there.
No conflict, I would tell you.
Good to know. Okay, so that passes unanimously. And now we move on to 10.06.
So, Kim, if you can go to page 99 of this contract. So we brought a resolution to the board that the board approved in terms of awarding Larry Weissong Construction Company as the Weissong Construction for the Bellevue Santa Fe project. So we're really trying to get in front of this project in particular because it's going to be a very short window. And we're going to be replacing, you know, basically all the classrooms on the campus. So it's very critical, Bellevue Santa Fe, the portables. So it's the main, you know, those are the main classrooms for the campus, a very small campus. So page 99. So at the very top, see where it says 195 to 237? Because it's different appendix. This is 237 pages that I'd hopefully not want to walk the board through because we've kind of gone through those at the board study session,
no.
Right, where we talked, it's all the same. All pretty much the same, except for what's probably the most important, which is what most board members would want to know, is what's this going to cost us, right? So, of course, the profit, fees, those types of things. And so page 99, that's 97.
It's cool you can do it that way.
Okay. So if you scroll down a little bit, we'll see the number. So Mr. Weissong actually came in, even though he was the only bid for this project, was actually cheaper than the bids we received from C.L. Smith in terms of overall cost, you know, profit, overhead, those types of things. So really a small pre-construction services fee to get this work started. He actually, in our conversations with Mr. Weissong, would really like to try to do the entire, if we are able to get the state matching funds, do the entire campus over the summer and not extend it out until November. So he's hoping that we can do that and going to work with us, and that's why it's, again, critical that we get the contractor in place now to ensure that we can do the work in that time. Mr. Weissong can meet the skilled and trained requirements that are outlined for lease-leaseback agreements and talking with him. And so tonight, basically, is we're asking for the board to approve the contract for Weissong Construction. Mr. Holcomb was part of the conversation in terms of, you know, putting this deal together with Mr. Weissong, was there, attended the meeting, so we can answer any questions that the board might have.
Mrs. Roger?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize my light was on.
Mr. Unger.
This is exclusive of the cost of the modular buildings. Is that correct?
This is the entire, this is for the entire work.
Right, but this isn't the cost of purchasing the modular.
No.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure in case anybody wondered about that. Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one. Mrs. Roger?
Then if there is no further comment, I would like to move approval of item 10.06.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And again, that is unanimous. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah.
Moving on to 10.07.
So I talked a little bit about the annex, which was a classroom building at San Luis Obispo High School that we're going to be bringing to the board at the next meeting to proceed. But at the same time, we have a classroom building at Morro Bay High School, and so that is the J Wing. Oh, no, wait, we're on the track and field project, excuse me.
Exactly.
First. So the as part of the track and field project at Morro Bay High School, it also includes the baseball softball field. So the first amendment we're bringing to you tonight, so we already have Acme Construction, that is doing the lease back, which was awarded the contract for the lease back project for the track and fields at Morro Bay High School. So this first amendment is the first portion of that work, which is basically to renovate the baseball and softball diamonds. So the track, the actual artificial track aspect, will be coming to the board, I believe, November, December, in terms of the rest of that project coming forward. So, but this is to do the two fields. It made the most sense to kind of tie it into that particular project. So that's what we have tonight. And so this is the First Amendment. Mrs. Holmes, you can pull it up. So this is actually a GMP, so guaranteed maximum price, to do that track and field work. You want to blow it up a little bit so that we can actually see it.
Catherine? So Mrs. Roger is going to comment.
Yeah, can you go down a little bit, Ken? So you can see the totals.
Really, what we want is the totals, and I can see them.
Yeah. So
what we're talking about here is for the track and field work and the baseball and softball fields, a price of $532,158.83, and then on top of which there is a 7.5% contingency that may or may not be used.
Yes.
And but were it to be used, it's $39,911 and some cents. So that would bring the total guaranteed maximum price to $572,070.75.
You'd be correct.
Okay.
You see, the majority of this work is redoing the irrigation. They're going to put put outfield fences, permanent outfield fences, and warning tracks. So on both fields. So that's the kind of the key aspect of that work.
Mr. Quisenberry.
So, and you're saying both fields, we use kind of east and west, or
so this is just the west.
West side.
The west side. So kind of making a varsity softball, varsity baseball on those sides.
Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? Seeing no one, take it back to the board.
I'll make a motion to accept the Measure D approved amendments. Number one, to the lease back contract for the Acme Construction to the Morro Bay High School track and field project.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And again, that passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. But
yeah, so the last project is the J-Wing building. So this encompasses the basically kind of next to the pool, the old auto shop building, wood shop, and wrestling room. So, of course, the wrestling room has been moved, renovated in the gym area. And so through the J-Wing, we will be going through. It's a brand-new ceramics lab, a new art classroom studio with the front. We have a new electronic media classroom with a green room in it. And so we've actually, through a recent CTE grant, Mr. Rapucci's been spending a lot of time in Santa Barbara at one of the kind of the key CTE facilities there that kind of has the same kind of tie-in and looking at moving from, you know, welding to plastics and robotics and kind of different things to kind of really improve instruction there, as well as there's been several other Morro Bay High School teachers that are also going to be heading over to Santa Barbara to visit the school as well. So they have their MAD Academy, they call it there, which is really a STEAM focused academy. And so this will also provide Mr. Rapucci a new classroom in terms of the computer repair, computers, and then there's also, again, kind of that robotics, lab, plastics area, as well as renovating the restrooms. So there'll be staff restrooms, there'll be student restrooms, and there'll also be some additional restrooms that are kind of non-gender restrooms. So this actually, the reason why we brought this forward and not the annex bid was this actually came in under the estimate. So the estimate for this building was $4.7 million when we put it through at DED's, and this, as you'll see, came in, the subtotal is 4.241744, so $4.2 million in terms of, so it came in a little under estimate, which is fantastic. That's great in terms of looking at everything. And again, I can't promise you that the annex will come in cheaper. We are getting more bids to see if we can bring that number down. We're looking at doing some things, buying the TVs ourselves, and, you know, different things like that that can hopefully lower that price. But this particular project did come in under that estimate that I'd share, the kind of the overall value. So we feel, you know, not fantastic about it, because it's still, I mean, we're, these projects are coming in, they're expensive. We're seeing that across the county, across the state, in terms of construction in general. But fortunately for us, it did come in under what we had estimated and what we had budgeted. So we're asking for approval tonight to move forward.
Mrs. Roger?
Thank you. This will be a question, I think, for Mr. Holcomb. I'm seeing here that we have 17 items totaling $443,000 plus that are in as allowance items.
That is correct. There are some things.
There are some things that were in the planning as an option, like a grid system in the art room, so you can hang mobiles and not mobiles. That's over a baby's crib, but
lights.
No. Pardon, lighting and even displays and that kind of thing. Not sure we're going to do them everywhere, so we know the number, but it was put in as allowance, so it can be deducted.
Okay, so then, in your opinion, do you think that some of these items we won't fully use the allowance, and therefore part of that $443,000, that figure will be reduced?
Yes.
Ultimately?
Yeah, like there's $2,000 in there for the repair of a garage door for the parts, and we just don't know what they are yet. So you just try to capture everything with a large enough number that when you bring a GMP in, the contractor is bound to it, and we're safe within that. So, and rarely will we exceed those, except in the case of the old gym, very likely here at Slo High School.
So while the actual bid came in below our estimate,
correct,
we may be even further below our estimate.
Exactly.
In the final analysis.
And as it reduces, it also reduces their profit, their overhead, their bond, all of that.
Okay.
So it's a formularized, and at least everything within those plans that can be scratched out has a number attached to it, either a hard bid or, if it's not easily defined because it's, you know, you're working in an old building, that at least it has an allowance for it.
We put something in for
right.
It.
The modular sound booth in particular and those allowances came from them visiting Santa Barbara and going, oh, my God, we got to have that. And they went, okay, let's, you know, if that's the case and that's what we need type of thing, they, you know, let's look at what that would be. And so that's why that allowance is located there. So
well, every bit of savings helps.
Absolutely.
Now, this is not a huge number compared to the size of the bond and the volume of work we'll be doing, but if the 443 could be reduced through not using all of these allowance items,
yes,
that would be great.
Yes.
Well, the
okay.
design of this is so it can ratchet down but not up. That GMP is a hard
right.
lid.
Right.
If we came along and said we want to put a observatory on the top of the J wing, we'd come back to you. That would be a change order to the GMP.
I certainly
not
hope
likely
so.
To happen.
I hope so.
Third Knights of the Coast.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Buckman, did yeah. we have comments? Mr. Buckman.
Sorry, thank you. So as you were talking about, maybe we would pay for the TVs ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It comes to my mind. We have developer fees, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering. I'm guessing, but I'm pretty sure we can use developer fees for the TVs.
Not on this project.
Not on this project, and that's because.
Because it's not a growth project at Morrilby High School.
It's not a growth project. Okay.
Annex, San Luis Obispo High School. We can use developer fees.
Okay.
Growth. Student growth, C.L. Smith, Bishop's Peak, where we're seeing growth in the student population, those are developer fee projects where you can utilize that.
Okay. And this may be unfair to ask off the cuff, but do you have a close number on how much is sitting in the developer fee account?
Yeah, it's about $10 million.
Okay, so we have a bit of flexibility there to use that.
Yeah, we're going to spend it.
And we're going to spend it. Okay, thank you.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this matter? See, no one will bring it back to the board for a vote. Mrs. Rogers?
I'd like to move approval, but I have to get back to what the item number was.
10.08.
I'd like to move approval of item 10.08.
Second.
So motion by Mrs. Rogers, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes unanimously.
Thank you. As these projects are, of course, as they complete, we'll be bringing back the board, especially as we close out projects, and sharing with you exactly where that number is.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkerton. We're moving on to action consent. I'd just like to point out to the board that these numbers are slightly changed from what you have in front of you because we omitted an action item at the top of the... Oh, if you're looking at the electronic version? Okay, but not the paper version that I'm looking at. Okay. Okay, so we have action consent items as follows. 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 11.02, reappointment of personnel commissioner. 11.03, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 11.04, approval of warrants and payroll.
Poll, please.
11.05, disposition of surplus property. 11.06, acceptance of donations. 11.07, approval of field trip requests. And 11.08, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings.
I would move approval of items 11.01 through 11.03 and 11.05 through 11.08.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Roger. Approval of 11.01 through 3 and 5 through 8. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That passes unanimously. And Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, in going through the approval warrants and payrolls, I noticed that I'm sorry, please? Thanks. I noticed that within that we were purchasing some copiers, and normally within the district we have our copiers on a lease agreement. So one of the it appears. So I contacted Julie, and Julie was able to explain this to me, which was great, and it saved her having to come tonight. One of the benefits of, I guess, Measure D is that we have some flexibility in that lease agreement, and the two machines that are being purchased are going to be using Measure D funds rather than modifying the entire lease agreement. And so I just wanted to make that clear if anybody had a question about that.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah,
I think that was noted in FERS. The purchase of the two copiers using Measure D funds was noted in the furniture and equipment request.
Sorry. So it just backs it up. Thanks. So I'll move approval of 11.04.
I'll second that.
Okay, the motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Unger, and that is 11.04. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes unanimously.
Moving on to advanced agenda, does anyone have anything they would like to add to the advanced agenda items, anyone? And moving on to board reports. Mr. Unger.
Well, I just wanted to thank the folks at Monarch Grove for allowing me to come and visit. A special thanks to Mrs. Storm and just all the teachers who I got to see. They're doing some really wonderful work there, especially their thinking maps. Every teacher has thinking maps up in their classroom, and it's not only guiding their writing and their reading, but it's guiding their oral language too. It was really exciting to see the work that everybody is getting on board at Monarch Grove for. And then Eric and I attended a meeting in Sacramento on Thursday. We're involved in an LCAP professional learning network with Steve Ladd as our facilitator. It was a really good, informative meeting, and I think we learned a lot, and one of the things we learned is just, again, the work that we've been doing is just right on. Yeah, so that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. And Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I was able to attend, I don't think you were there this time, Dr. Prater. You must have been off with Chris. This was the first parent meeting of the year. It's hard to be in two places at the same time. Right. And so Ryan and Kimberly were there. And I just want to point out sometimes this might, meeting with the PTAs and the Boosters Clubs, that at the meetings, the district is sharing many of the same reports that we're seeing here. And this is, it's just great because it's getting out into the community and it's not just sitting down and having coffee and tea. It's really good information being shared. I also attended the Student Senate. And for me, one of the things that I was noticed and I was really kind of up about was the students seemed to be really excited about the whole process and being asked what their opinions were. And I just think it's great that we're reaching out to the students and involving them.
Thank you. And Mrs. Sheffer.
Just very briefly, I wanted to just after our report by tonight, I am now following Humans of Soul HS on my Instagram, so it's very easy to find them and do that. And then secondly, and I wanted to point out, as several of us know, that the daughter of one of our school custodians suffered multiple gunshot wounds at the Las Vegas shooting. And yeah, I hope I can get through this, but there is an update stating that she is hoping to be moved out of ICU. She's doing breathing exercises to strengthen her lungs. She's still in pain, but improving. And there is a GoFundMe account which has been set up. Anyone who can donate to help the family, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
How would you go about finding GoFundMe?
If you go to GoFundMe, it's Davy Jones Family, D-A-V-E-Y, Jones Family.
Thank you, Mrs. Sheffer. And Mrs. Roger.
Okay, my short little report is that I had the opportunity to visit a special education classroom at Los Osos Middle School since the last meeting, and I was really impressed with the level of services and the number of personnel that we bring in to wrap around our special needs students. So that was really heartwarming to go to that classroom. And then the other thing is I went by Baywood School and took them the pumpkins from my garden like I always do, and I went into Fiona Lloyd Moffitt's classroom, her preschool classroom, and I finally broke loose. I twisted my own arm, and I donated all my Brio trains that I have had since my 32 and 28-year-olds were little. And you should have seen the little preschoolers. I wondered if maybe they were too young. They were not too young. They started putting that track together. And with the drawbridge and all that stuff, they were beyond stoked. So It was a wonderful, I felt wonderful giving them to Baywood School. And I do want, you know, Fiona Lloyd Moffitt is our Teacher of the Year and also the County Teacher of the Year. So I want to give her another shout out as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And we all, many of us, enjoyed being with her for that exciting occasion and celebration. I was also able to visit Monarch Grove, Mrs. Storm, and Sinsheimer with Mr. Martin. And thank you, Mrs. Holmes, for recommending that we check out the art, the surfboard art at Forever Stoked. It was really fun. There were a lot of Morro Bay High School students who were either artists or surfers or both. And it was just a whole culture trip for me that I'd never experienced, and that was quite fun.
You get up the coast more often.
I guess. And, oh, Mr. Miller.
I'm breaking with tradition. I had a lovely time at the Employee Teacher of the Year dinner. I had previously been to Fiona's classroom and knew how special she is in her class. It was great to see her recognized. It was very inspirational to just hear from the teachers who were nominated and the things that they said. I'm still trying to figure out the Mardi Gras theme, but the good part was Fiona collected everybody's Mardi Gras mask and said she's going to use this with her in her preschool. So it was a great time, very, very inspirational, kind of brought back why we're all doing what we're doing.
Thank you, Mr. Millar.
That's it.
A rare occasion. Thank you. And that's all for our meeting tonight. And thank you for those of you who came out and stayed with us for the duration. Thank you very much.
And our classified employee of the year, he is a mechanic in our down in our bus area. He is, I guess, recognized as one of the finest bus mechanics in probably the state, if not the United States. He's been recognized in different magazines and stuff like that, completely dedicated to his job. And to hear what the drivers and other folks in BG&T and transportation had to say about him was really heartwarming. Yeah.